Guess what? I'm moving country again. I don't know, maybe a year, maybe more. Where's home? Home's everywhere. I'm an expat.
Hello, it's Pauline. Welcome to a new episode of Meet the Expats. Today I meet with Elena, who left Russia quite a few years ago to move to the US and is now living in France with her family. And today she'll be sharing a lot around the methodology behind learning languages to help expats integrate in their new home and new country. Hi, Elena. How are you?
Hi, Pauline. I'm good. Thank you for such a nice introduction. Thank you so much for having me. You're really welcome. Excited.
Elena is actually also a very new and fresh podcaster around languages.
Yeah, I just started 3 weeks ago, so I have 3 new episodes.
There you go, so you can catch up on that also.
Yeah, it's called Foreign Language Roadmap. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and whatever else little platforms that are out there available for the podcasters.
Wherever you listen. All right. Well, let's start with a brief introduction of yourself, your background, and then we'll jump into your expat journey.
Yeah, so my background is I grew up back in Russia until I was 19, and I only spoke one language. And I always felt like I just not talented in languages. It's, you know, in school there was English and at some point there was French, but I always felt like it was not my thing. I could never learn it. And then I moved to the US when I was 19 with like barely any English. Mm. And that mentality, that limit that I had for myself, that I can't learn languages, that it's just not for me, that my brain just doesn't work that way, held me back for so long. And it took me so much effort to break through that and to convince myself otherwise that I can actually do. And now I'm on my fifth language. Now learning Spanish. Okay. And now I have a whole methodology of how I go about it. And it just breaks all the barriers that I used to have about how not talented I am at languages.
All right. So anyone can do it is basically what you're telling us.
Yeah, that's what I'm really convinced about, that as long as you have the right mindset and the right tools, you can do it to some degree or the other. You know, some people want to pass exams, some people just want to talk to people, and some people just want to connect with the people in different languages. It's all possible. I'm convinced that it's possible for anyone.
All right. Well, we'll dive into that piece just after. Let's go back to the beginnings and how you moved. What made you say, okay, I'm leaving Russia and going to the US?
And that part was kind of, it was really long time ago. It was in 2005. And I guess it was just more like stupidity because I was 19. And my mom was like, hey, you know, I've heard this opportunity for students to go visit the US for 3 months to work and travel. A lot of people probably heard about this program. So that's what I did. I was like, oh, sounds cool. Okay, let's go do that. And it did not meet my expectations. Like, I didn't really have many expectations because in the, you know, 90s and early 2000s in Russia, there wasn't a lot of exposure to how the world actually lives outside. And so I didn't even have any expectations, but it was really tough. It was really hard. I basically stayed in a Russian-speaking community and we just hung out among ourselves. Together. We didn't really get much exposure to the American culture. And I came back in October of that year and I thought I would never, ever, ever do that again. It was just so traumatizing. It was so not fun. But the problem was I met a boy right before I left the US. And so that made me decide to give it another chance. And the next year I already went with the idea that I'm going to do university, that I'm going to do college, I'm going to improve my English, and I'm going to settle down in the US.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. So the year after that, that's what I did. I basically left with the idea that I'm not coming back anymore. And I didn't.
It's amazing the shift that one person can do of, I stayed 3 months, I hated it, I'm not going back, to suddenly, well, I'm moving permanently.
Yeah.
Pretty brave.
Pretty stupid as well. You know,
just, well, it's just,
they not
out
being,
how it did.
Yeah, it's just not thinking about what the situation entails. It's just like, oh,
yeah, the implications,
you know,
behind, yeah.
That's kind of how it happened for me the first time.
Okay. And so how did you sort of pass those barriers and were able to settle in and actually make your life there for so long?
I accepted the move. I think the biggest change what happens with any situation is when you change your mindset and you change your attitude. If the first time, the first summer, I was all about, oh, I'm only going to be here for 4 months. Mm. I don't even really need the language. Yeah, I don't even really need to meet the people. I don't really need to know the culture. I'm only here for 3 months. I'm out of here. And when I changed my mindset that, no, it's actually, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to stay here. I found opportunities to learn English, to pass the exam. I don't know if you know TOEFL, Test of English as a Foreign Language.
Yeah.
So I passed it within 6 months and got into college, got scholarship, and it all kind of just started falling into place. As soon as I changed my mindset that this is going to happen, I'm not going back. And even in the toughest days, you know, my mom would call me and, you know, at the time in 2005, I had to buy a card and call my mom once a week. She would tell me, hey, listen, if it's so hard, just come back. Mm. But in my head, I was settled. It's not going to happen, me coming back. Okay. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to do whatever it takes. And things just started kind of presenting itself. You know, people started showing up in my life who would give me a hand here or there, who would show me around, who would help me out with a lot of things, who would direct me in places. And eventually, even like this great thing, I got a scholarship to a university that covered everything. It covered tuition, room and board in the dorms at the university, food and books, everything. So I basically just had to show up and study. Yeah. So it all kind of like happens once you set your mindset to it.
Okay. So you made your life in the US and had a family. After 17 years, you guys decide to make the move to France. Why?
Yeah.
What happens?
Right, that's what I thought when my husband first said, oh, I want to move to France. I was like,
okay, what's from him? Right?
What are you talking about? I mean, I made so much effort to make my life in the US, and now you're telling me, let's
quit. I'm going back on the other side.
And go back to that side. Well, the thing is that my husband is from Louisiana, and he has French and Italian roots, and he always wanted to, you know, it's kind of like what our ancestors ran away from. We now the time
wanna
changed.
Discover.
Yeah, we want to discover the history, the life, the culture, and he wanted to get to know his roots, Italian and French roots, and he realized that he could get Italian citizenship through his ancestors.
Okay.
And so that kind of like opened up the doors. And he asked me if I wanted to move. Initially, I was like, are you crazy? That's not going to happen. But over time, warmed up to the idea, and we set up a plan for ourselves, for about a 5-year plan to get everything in place, get everything ready, because we also have kids. My kids are 9 and 12 now. So we had to consider their schooling, and we put them in a French international school in the US.
Okay.
We prepared our house, you know, we sold our house, we sold our stuff, cars. And also my husband was burned out at work, and he was just not feeling like he could get out of it without leaving.
Leaving completely.
Yeah, like being there, it would still be, first of all, life in the US is significantly more expensive, especially we're in DC. So it's one of the very expensive areas of the US. And you have to keep up, you have to maintain your lifestyle. So you have to keep working a lot. And he was just burned out, and he was just on the edge of not even enjoying life anymore, and wanted to find that joy of life again. And I mean, who knows better how to live than French? So
Italians too.
Yeah, Italians too. But I feel like, you know, with the Sundays closed, with the 3-hour lunch break, with, you know, I kind of like the, I like the comparison of how they say Americans, they live to work, and Europeans, they work to live. Yeah. So their life, the point of their life is not their job. For Americans, it is most of the time, because there's just so many opportunities that you just don't want to pass them out. You just want to grab everything that you see. And so, yeah, and we decided to just take a break and take a slower French life.
Okay. And so what you say, he wanted to discover his French and Italian roots. He was able to get Italian citizenship. Mm-hmm. Why? How did the balance play, and how did you pick France versus Italy?
Oh, that was a simple pick. Taxes. Italy does not work with Americans on their taxes. So Italy wants their 100% taxes, and the US says, oh no, we still want our taxes, even though you moved abroad. France is more understanding. I guess they have an agreement, and the tax pact between taxation pact between the US and France, a certain rules apply. And so that was a lot more beneficial for us. So we decided to start with France and see how that goes, and see if we'll later move somewhere else or not. We just kind of decided to not tie ourselves to a place for the moment, and to just see how it goes.
Okay. But that was the first criteria of, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have never thought of it. It's not something I would have thought to look into.
That's my husband, who is the one who is like, okay, it's great to take it slow, but what about the money?
Yeah, well, it's important. It has to be considered. So,
especially if you want to take back your life and to work less, and you still have a family to support, you still you have to think about how that.
You're gonna look into it. Yeah. All right. So you made the move to France. How did you blend in and adapt, make it work?
Are we still working on that? We're still, well, you know, it's less than 2 years since we moved.
Okay.
So we're still working on that. We're making friends. We have a bunch of interesting experiences here. Some are great, some are a little difficult, some are challenging, some are shocking for us Americans. But for the most part, we as adults, we really like it. We like the lifestyle. We've adjusted to, you know, how you probably heard Americans come to Europe and be like, oh my gosh, I can't get food on Sunday. You know, everything's closed. Yeah. That was a big adjustment, because in the US, everything's available anytime. You don't have to even worry about time of the day to go eat. And here, that was food, one of the first adjustments for us, the hours that the food is served in the restaurants and the grocery stores. If you didn't get groceries before Sunday, and like if you're thinking that you're going to go grocery shopping on Sunday, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's the case in slightly smaller cities. In Paris, you'll always find, not every neighborhood, but you'll always find at some point a grocery store that's open on a Sunday. But as soon as you move out into slightly smaller cities, it's a bit more regulated. But it used to be like that even in Paris, where on Sundays it was closed also until I think maybe 7 or 8 years back, they passed a law where shops could open X Sundays a year or something like that, making it a bit more easy to manage. But it's a rhythm. Once you have the rhythm, you get it.
yeah. It's an adjustment. It's how this culture runs, and you like it or you go back. So it's that simple, in my opinion. When you move somewhere, you don't try to impose your rules, or you don't try to complain that things don't work the same way as they work back at home. You're either adjust to it and take it as is, or you don't have to. You go back. You know, it's nobody really holding you in a foreign country. So
You're not held, but it's true that you. I think there's always this feeling that you've gone this far, you've moved everything, you've put in so much effort and done all the admin, gotten rid of, you know, you said it, you sold the house, you sold the cars and everything. Once you're there, like, I have to try and make it work. You know, you can leave, but at the same time, it's going to be that same exact process in reverse that you just went through, and you really think about it before you actually make the step of.
Yeah, well, my guess is in that case, which we kind of skipped that step, but it's a wise step to do, I think, is to actually go in and live there for a month or two at least to see how it is, and to a place where you are going to move. Because if in 2 months something is really pissing you off, and I'm not even talking about bureaucracy or anything, that's going to come later. And it's not going to be a constant in your life. It's just whenever you need to deal with paperwork. But, like, you know, cultural nuances, if some of the cultural nuances really bother you within those 2-3 months, especially for the Americans, between the U.S. and European Union, there is a 90-day visa-free period where you can just go and live there for a while. So if you're considering an area to live or to move to, it's kind of wise to go in and check it out and live there, especially if you have a really easy opportunity to do that for 3 months, which we skipped. We kind of just, like, it
went
was
straight in.
yeah, we kind of, funny thing, we've never even been to Lyon before we just bolted everything and moved here.
But so how did you choose Lyon then if you hadn't been?
Oh, well, because internet, we can research because we wanted to travel a lot while we're here, because my son plays hockey and it was one of few towns that actually has a hockey team.
Okay.
Because we wanted to be in a center like in a center of a big town, but not like Paris is a little too big for us with distances and the size of everything. And the prices as well.
Yeah, constantly.
In smaller towns, like we considered ANSI, which is much smaller, and there's a huge expat, American expat community, as we've discovered. But it would be too small for us.
Okay.
In terms of how we wanted to change our life.
To live, yeah.
Yeah, we wanted to walk around. We wanted to be able to go around on foot on public transportation and be able to do things and still have things to do actually in town.
Yeah.
And so Lyon just fit this perfect criteria. They have international schools for our kids.
Oh, wow.
Because even though our kids speak, at this point, they're pretty much fluent in French. They've been schooled in it for 5 years by now. So they speak definitely French better than us.
I think you mentioned that. Yeah, they went to a French school in the U.S. before.
So they did 3 years in the French international school back in the U.S. and it's our second year here. So it's 5 years schooled in French. But we still find that it's for us as foreigners, given that we don't know how long we're going to stay in France, it's more beneficial for us to be in an international school than 100% French.
Yeah, of course.
And so that was the criteria why we were looking at Lyon, and it just fit perfectly, all the criteria. And schools.
And schools, yes, of course. Yeah, you don't have international schools all over the country for sure, so it's great that Noel has them.
Yeah.
All right. And so what about learning the language on your side? This is a big, you work a lot on this topic. How were you able and your husband able to adjust to this completely new language and environment?
Yeah, so for me, French is my fourth language. So I already had an idea of how to learn it. Mm-hmm. And so I started 2 years before, as I said, we made a five-year plan with my husband, how we're going to go about it. And so I started learning French about 2 years before the move so that I'm at least like on a conversational level as we hit the ground. And I've been improving ever since. I've been dealing with all the paperwork here, with all the issues that we've had. We've had a flood in our apartment. We've had my son being hit by a electrical scooter here. You know, while he was playing football on the square. So things like that happen, and you know, it requires you take your son to the hospital. It requires the language to deal with the doctor and everything. And so I've been improving as I go, and I do it with my method. I continue working with my method, and my husband is also following my method. And since we got here, he started working on it, and he's following step by step of the whole approach. He knows exactly what he's working on and how he's improving. Mm. And by now, he even has his flower guy on Sunday markets. He comes home telling me, my flower guy tells me this and that about these flowers. So he's also improving.
All right. So what would be some tips that you could give the audience around the methodology or learning a new language?
I would definitely say that language is really important when you're moving abroad, especially if you're looking to integrate into the culture and to accept the culture. So how I would start about it is set a plan of what, first of all, what you want with it, how you want to be with the language. Do you want to pass a test and achieve something? Do you want some academics or something? Or if you want to have conversations with people, if you want to make friends with neighbors or some people who move abroad with their, like, to be with the partner who is, for example, French or Italian, Spanish. The partner already speaks the language, so they have a family, they have a network of people who speak that language, and you want to integrate with that. That's a totally different goal than, for example, for career or for a test. So I would say that you need to really clear yourself the idea of why you're studying this and what your goals are. And from there, understand the steps of how you learn. Are you a visual learner, or you understand better by listening to something or by writing? So all of these types, all these things really matter if you want to be efficient. Okay. Most importantly, not to be random and not to just randomly do whatever advice you see on the internet. Try to see maybe people who are polyglots, who learn languages in a specific way. My methodology is built on a four-step approach. That is, you go from complete zero to you building a foundation with grammar. And then you're moving on to listening and speaking skills. And there are specific techniques that I suggest to do for each step. And my specific idea about the methodology is that not to consider yourself a forever learner, to at some point to accept the language as this part of your life now. It's your forever part of your life, and you're not taking it as a chore that you need to continually learn. It becomes a part of your life, and that's when you start doing things in that language without thinking, oh my gosh, this is a chore. Oh my gosh, I have to really overcome this fear. It becomes, when you get to that fourth stage, it becomes just like your native language. It's not as profound as your native language, but you consider it as, you know, it's like, for example, my stage, when I get to that point, I watch movies in that language. I do not watch movies until I get to that point, because it's discouraging. I don't understand much. and I don't have enough vocabulary. I don't understand a lot. And it just makes me feel like, oh gosh, I'm just so dumb. I can't understand. And so, yeah, just kind of like, according with my method, you go through four stages. Different people learn it differently. And you just need to sort of understand how you learn best.
All right. And so you have a language challenge coming up, you were mentioning?
Yeah. Oh, thank you for mentioning it. Yeah. So my language challenge that I am, it's based on this exact method that the four-stage method that I was talking about. And it is a free challenge that starts on March 11th.
Okay.
And basically anybody can join it. There's going to be 5 days of lessons with activities, challenges, action steps that you can actually take right away. And you will walk out with a plan of what you specifically need to do and how to find time and how to stay interested in all of the things that you are doing with your target language. When you finish the challenge, you will know what you need to do to continue with your target language. So I invite all of our listeners to come join. You can send me a message and I will give you the link to join the challenge. It's completely free, no obligation. And it's going to be fun. I hope to see you there.
Okay, well, we'll link the contact details in the description of this episode. Let's move on to your recommendations in Lyon. Now you've been there 2 years, you're starting to know the city a little bit. So what would be your favorite either bar or cafe, restaurant, and carte blanche as part of your choice? Anything.
So my favorite cafe, definitely there's one spot that I discovered by accident. It's called Moxa. And they have literally the best coffee you've ever tried. Anybody who comes to Lyon and I take you to that place, they walk out as different people. And they search for something like this anywhere they live. And I've had multiple people, multiple visitors come see me, and whoever I've taken there, they always now send me a picture and saying, "Hey, my coffee looks great, but it's not the same as Moxa." So that's probably definitely anytime anybody asks me, "What's your favorite place in Lyon?" Yeah, that's Moxa.
Okay, it's the go-to. All right.
What else was there?
A restaurant.
So Lyon is known supposedly for its food, for a bunch of different cuisines. And so it's very hard to pick. It's very hard to find one place that I would say for a restaurant that I would say, oh, that's the spot, like Moxa, you know? Okay. I have not found one yet. I've liked a bunch, but not one that I'd be like, oh, yeah, you have to really go try that.
All right. Well, no problem. Let's move on to your carte blanche then. Spot of your choice.
Okay, then my favorite spot is going to be biking along the river. We have two rivers here, Rhône and Saône, and both of them, especially Rhône, it has long walkways down by the river, and it's my absolute favorite thing to do. There's at the end of one of the walkways is the big park. It's compared actually to Central Park in New York City in terms of proportions to the city, because of how, I mean, it's not as big as Central Park, but proportionally, if you look at the size of the city of Lyon and how much space the park takes, it's pretty similar to how much proportionally space Central Park takes of Lyon. I don't know if it makes sense. Anyways, it's a beautiful park with a lake and beautiful paths to walk around. So I really like to take a bike or rollerblades and go with my family or by myself on the weekends. It's usually nice and quiet in the mornings because apparently people don't like to wake up early. So if you go before 9 a.m.
to the market.
Yeah, yes. And yeah, that's my favorite thing to do.
Okay. Yeah, the park is pretty nice there. All right. And last, what is your expat song?
That one is, if you know Andrei Banuta, It's a Mon Ami. For some reason, I heard that song as we were packing up for our trip to Serena something in Andrei Banuta. It's called Mon Ami. And okay. It's just like so upbeat and so like fun and rhythmic song. And they speak so fast, the parts of it speak so fast that I was determined to learn how they speak it. There's like the French pronunciations, like with the cœur, bataratatai, and all this. It was like so many different sounds, movements of the mouth that I was, first time I heard it, I was like, that's beautiful, but how do they say it? How do they physically move their mouth in this speed and direction? And I was determined to learn it, and I did. And that's now just kind of just for me, anytime I think about France, I think about that song and how it was kind of like the feeling of overcoming the challenge of learning how to move my mouth in that way to keep up with that song was, yeah, that's kind of my song.
All right. Well, great. I'll be linked in description also, so you can go listen to it and try to keep up with the words.
Sounds great.
Well, thank you so much, Elena, for sharing your story, sharing also the steps in your methodology to learn languages. Don't forget, there's a language challenge coming up in March 11th, so you can reach out to Elena directly if you have questions and want to join. And as usual, if you enjoyed the episode, you can put a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and follow all the updates on Instagram.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.